Yes, we were surrounded on three sides, all right.
But there was a fourth.
A victory tomorrow. It had to be today.
I figured another stripe for a cop, and I got the stripe.
Today we discuss a subject of some seriousness, of some importance. That does not sound serious, you say? But think of America without it. Can you think of America without it? It's unnatural. It's frightening. Free men laugh, and laughter frees man. It's hard to laugh with the head bowed down. Try it. See how naturally your head comes up, your eyes look up, your heart and spirit rise up? So laughter fits our subject today, which is merely us, you and me, Americans. What we've got, what we want to keep, the things we have inherited.
This is Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents Adventurer's Laughter. The qualities our laughing friends today stand for include dislike of pompousness, solemnity, and all stuffed shirts, refusal to be licked, to knuckle down, to let a lost cause be lost if once they've taken on the job of winning it, audacity, bravado, sense of fun. They sit here now, adventurers of America, assembled for you around a great round table of the imagination, men of history, dulled by black and white of print, weighed down by monument and tomb and elegy, here gathered to flame out with wit and dash once more, to become again the gleam on the sword, the color on the shield, to prove with fact these things have value for America. Come into the meeting. Leif Erikson sits on one side of the table. Christopher Columbus on the other.
We've met the enemy and they are ours.
We keep that much distance between. There's bandy-legged Kit Carson, old Andy Jackson, mad Tony Wayne. Oh, their chairman's rapping for silence.
Let us come to order, gentlemen, at least such order as we care to observe.
He's old Ben Franklin, lifelong wit. They wouldn't let him write the Declaration of Independence, the story goes, because they were afraid he'd slip a joke into the middle. He's a good man for this job.
Now the roll call. Answer to your name or wave or make your presence known. Daniel Boone?
He's there across the table near Kit Carson.
James Ewell Brown Stewart, called Jeb.
Your servant, Mr. Franklin, sir.
Davy Crockett. Joshua Barney.
So many here. Every manner of dress, every manner of face, every manner of man. Some tall, some short, some lank, some large. Some handsome.
Abe Lincoln.
And some homely, in the extreme.
A quorum is present. The meeting is open for discussion. And since the only discussion we've got on the agenda is ourselves and our adventures, the meeting is open for high talk. We'll start at the beginning and with a common name, familiarly American. John Smith. It's very fitting, somehow. John Smith, begin.
Captain John Smith at your service, sir.
You know, listeners, Jamestown, Pocahontas, and so forth.
Captain John Smith, and factual facts, I prithee, Captain John. Adventures in America. Let's not go further back than that.
You'll not have time for all my adventures?
Right, John. Right. Not time.
And in America, please, Smith, not that old saw about Pocahontas. Not that again.
Oh, gentlemen, you leave me little. But very well. We'll begin in 1609, then. In Jamestown, we'll begin. It's a little frightened town. I am president of the council, and I am not at ease about the coming winter. There is little food, and there are many savages. Powhatan, my adopted father of the Pocahontas episode 2 years before, has grown great in his own eyes. He sends demands to us.
White man send workmen to build me a white man house. Send 50 swords, 50 guns. You can have corn if Smith come to get it.
An obvious trap. I set out for his village one early morning.
You went in spite of the trap?
I have never been able to see a trap, gentlemen, without wishing to turn it on the trapper. I have always been so. So in the finance and two barges, 47 of us went up the Potomac River.
Listeners, do you see it? Wilderness, bleak, naked winter trees, slow, frozen river, a little boat, few men. Are you with Smith on the Indians River in 1609?
No welcome for us on shore when we land. Only a distant drumming and a rattling of gourds. And when I reach the chief, no greeting then, only coolness. He does not call me by my tribal name. We make a haggling bargain.
Powhatan will load your boats with corn. You give Powhatan copper, beads, swords, and help to build real chieftain house.
A bargain, but we do not trust each other, my Indian father and I. And I am not surprised when a warning comes. A warning from, gentlemen, I hope you do not mind.
Mind?
Pocahontas.
Oh, Smith!
Well, she brought word that her father would delay the loading of our boats so that we would be there one night more. And on this night, 8 braves would come with feasting food, thinking that we would lay our guns aside while eating. They came to our wigwam, where we are 3. Dr. Russell, George Percy, and myself.
Powhatan, send food to white men.
We accept his gift. You may take Powhatan our thanks.
We wait.
Very well. Now, Russell, Percy, let us sit down here and feast.
8 of them, John, as she said. And I doubt not their brothers are outside surrounding us.
Aye, Percy, this little heat-filled wigwam is our island in a sea of savages.
How many?
Well, the tribe is large. We sit our backs against the tent wall and feast. Our 4 8 Indians are sad. For in our belts we wear 4 pistols each, and on the ground beside us, cocked, primed, and ready, another close to hand. You see, we do not leave our weapons by. Ha ha, their faces. The inexpressive Indian, the wooden countenance. You've heard that many times. Well, if you could have seen our 8. But we finish at last. We wipe our mouths, and still they cannot spring upon us. I think with pity of those red men in the bush waiting for a signal that does not come. My compassion moves me to act. Percy, Russell, now's the time.
Ready, Smith.
My brothers of the tribe of Powhatan, you will surrender.
What?
You will lie down flat and let us tie you tight. Now, perhaps they do not understand all my words. They understand our guns. Flat on their faces now, red-brown bodies on red-brown dirt. Percy, tie them up. Russell, hold your guns on them. I'll take 2 for company and speak to those outside.
He pushes 2 before him as a shield, steps to the door of the wigwam. You see him, listeners? Dark figure backed by the flickering fire inside, plainly visible, only a shadow for a face. But we're close enough to see he's grinning like a Cheshire cat.
Warriors of the Powhatans, you wait a signal. I bring it.
There is a stir in the outer darkness, a murmuring.
Since coming among you in this land, my brothers, we have learned something of the ambuscade. What ho, my men!
What ho, Captain!
You surrounders have been surrounded. Now, back to your wigwams and dream of conquest. You are not fit to fight. Only silence. Then the faint sound of bare feet moving away, padding away, fading, vanishing. We sailed to Jamestown next day, safe and with supplies.
Good man, Smith.
The colony survived the winter, as you know. I had a touch of indigestion from our feast. But that would have been worth it if it had brought on the gout.
Hello, Smith. Good boy, Johnny.
His dash and pluck, his swagger and his laugh braced hearts and filled granaries. His adventures were the colony's life, pulled it through more than one winter. His bravado had purpose.
A good story, well told, Captain Smith, and factual?
On my honor, Mr. Franklin.
Good. Now another speaker from our membership, Captain Thomas Haywood. Take over, please.
You may not know this adventurer, listeners, but you should. He signed the declaration. A tall young man.
I'm Haywood. I hope you didn't cut friend Smith here short for me. He has more color and more range.
My little story is encompassed round with stern gray walls. Its setting is a prison cell. It was rather fun.
Listeners, you're being called upon for extraordinary travel today in connection with this gathering. Will you try jail?
It was the ancient Spanish prison just outside St. Augustine. The British held it at the time, 1780. The revolution still went on. They held me and Middleton and Rutledge, other signers of the Declaration, imprisoned for our signing. It was July 4th. We had been allowed a big plum pudding. We smuggled in a flag, a very little flag. We stuck it in the pudding. We gave a quick salute, and we stood up and sang.
The guards could hear the tune through the thick walls, and they wondered at our turncoat tendencies. Here we were singing God Save the King. Americans singing that. Well, so they thought.
God save the 13 states, 13 United States. God save them all.
I'd made up new words.
A good man, Haywood. No demerits on your prison record afterward?
I think we got good behavior stripes instead, Mr. Franklin.
We sang those words in New Hampshire, Haywood.
In Virginia.
In Maryland.
In New York.
We didn't know you wrote them, but they were good to sing.
Yes, they were good to sing. And that plum pudding. Oh. Man!
You were so brief and modest, Thomas. We'll try a story now with a bit more ego in it. A gentleman, a man of the sea with a rolling gait and a rollicking eye. Tommy Boyle, privateersman of Baltimore.
Thank you, Ben, but my yarn soon told. The sea wrote it, and the wind delivered it, and the elements laughed with me.
A gay man.
In 1812, 13, and 14, this little country of ours was at war. On the sea, mostly, which made it my war. Now, England claims she had us blockaded. She told the world.
A strict and rigorous blockade has been established. You must not trade with America.
But what she said was not true. She did not station an adequate force in our waters to maintain such a blockade. She needed her ships elsewhere, and so she used them elsewhere, relying on her proclamations alone to hem us in. In effect, she warned the world,
even if you cannot find any ships, don't question our blockade. It exists in our minds.
It was just a paper blockade, you see. But it frightened nations that had supplies that they might have sent us. And it frightened inland America, too. I thought something should be done about it.
You against the British Isles, Tommy Boy?
It rather turned out that way. In August 1814, we stole out of the harbor of Baltimore, past the friendly guns of Fort McHenry.
Starboard course!
In the anonymity of moonless night, white sails lashed tight to darkened spars, we laughed at any blockade, real or fancied. A pretty ship, the Brig Chasseur, and proud, a thoroughbred. 16 long 12-pounders aboard her, and a heap of sail.
Are you aboard her, listeners? I hope you'll not be seasick. She's fast, but she has a roll when seas are running. We're off to England. We'll be in trouble all the way. We'll be an adventure all the way. Boyle's captured the Hopewell, the Bowes, the Scotch, the Adelphi, the Brig Alexis, the Dominica, and the Jane. Defeated the Hibernia and outsailed pursuing men of war. We're in English waters now. The waves almost sing Britannia here.
English flag! She's coming fast, Captain!
Aye.
Ready at the long tom!
We'll give her one raking shot when she comes up. Close with her and board.
We're closing in fast.
Hoist colors! A shot will decide it to run, sir.
Not too late. We're close enough now.
Fire the long tom!
Her topsail's hanging.
I can make out her name, the Calvary. They're trying to put a boat.
They can't. We're near abreast.
She's striking her colors, sir.
Aye, that she is. We won't need to board.
Aboard you there, ship Calvary. Where's your captain?
I'm Captain Fox of the Calvary, sir. Well, outmanned and outgunned, we surrender.
And you're wise, my captain. Tell your men to throw down their arms. I plan to make cartel of your ship, send you into England on parole, your men to be exchanged for American prisoners. And you will take a message from me to Lloyd's.
Lloyd's Coffee House in London?
Aye, the great maritime insurance center. And you will ring the great bell that they sound when news comes in. And you will read it out aloud by message.
A message you sent in to Lloyd's, Boyle?
Aye. I wish I could have taken it myself to be there when it was read, just as I put it down.
Gentlemen, a communication. Whereas it has become customary with the admirals of Great Britain commanding small forces on the coast of the United States to declare all the coast of that country in a state of strict and rigorous blockade without possessing the power to justify this declaration, I do therefore, by the virtue of the power and authority in me vested, and possessing sufficient force, declare all the ports, harbors, bays, creeks, rivers, inlets and outlets, islands and seacoast, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland in a state of strict and rigorous blockade.
Boy, you did.
Shh, there was more.
And I do hereby caution and forbid the ships and vessels of all and every nation, in amity and peace with the United States, from entering or attempting to enter, or from coming or attempting to come out of any of the said ports, harbors, bays, creeks, rivers, inlets and outlets, islands or seacoast, under any pretense whatsoever, given under my hand aboard the Chasseur, Thomas Boyle.
Boyle, as I said before, you didn't.
I did.
Oh, they were indignant. They called me names. The puppy, the confounded, the so-and-so, and so forth. Though I'll admit some of them laughed.
And laughter swept the American coast from Baltimore to Boston. Tommy Boyle's blockade and Tommy, too, were so American, so heartening. And citizens of other lands looked now at the English blockade of America, looked hard, and with new opened eyes found it truly little more than paper, a few token ships. The laughter was a cleansing wind and tonic. It came when needed. It helped through hard days. It was a lift over a bad place in history.
It wasn't anything. I just blockaded the British Isles.
Oh, it'll take a fine flaring tongue to top you, Tommy.
Here goes Tom, all the rebel that leans on his sword. And while we are mounting, praise low to the Lord. Now each apple.
But there's a young man here, scarlet lining to his gray cape, gold cockade on his cocked hat, and a peacock plume.
Listeners, friends, Franklin's talking about Jeb Stuart. You heard him answer roll call. He's standing now quite near me, very tall, long legs, broad shoulders, a brave red beard to make his young face seem not so young.
There's always laughter and music riding with him. There's never any sadness where he is.
Thank you, Mr. Franklin. That's a fine introduction. Now, I'm the top Tommy Boyle? Well, I doubt it. But I've had a few adventures in my time.
A few? Oh, Jeb!
Are you in the saddle, listeners, and ready? Hard riding ahead. Stuart always wore his horses out.
You see, General Lee often had need to know the strength of the enemy, the place of his camp, the temper of his men. So we'd set out, my boys and I. Sweeney, give us a tune.
Here's old Stonewall, the rebel that leans on his sword. And while we are mounting, praise low to the Lord.
Sweeney was a cavalryman who carried a banjo to war. Honest, he's in history.
And the men in the camp would call out,
"Where you going, Beauty Stuart, right now so early?
Why don't you stay where the fighting is?
How long you gonna be gone, Jeb?"
"Oh, it may be for years, it may be forever."
Many adventures we began that way. We rode around McClellan on the Chickahominy in 62, month of June. Yep, ring around the rosy with an army in the center. We didn't start out to do it, understand? We just went riding past the enemy's right flank to their rear to scout Yankee positions, burn Yankee supplies. But the Yanks took so long to catch on to the fact we were in their lines, we got in a little deeper than we meant to. Well, when after 3 days they acknowledged our presence, It didn't seem smart to turn around and face them, snarling like. We were just a Pekingese to their Great Dane. 1,200 of us, 25,000 of them. It wouldn't have been wise either to retrace our steps. They were waiting for us there. No, the prudent thing to do was to get still closer. We had good sport. Snatched puzzled prisoners.
What are you rebels doing way back here?
Has the Union fallen?
The pursuing force lost our trail and stopped at every crossroads to look for tracks or ask the local populace.
Which way went Stuart?
Why, even when the sullen, slow black water of the Chickahominy rose so high we couldn't ford it, we had time to build a bridge.
In enemy territory, Stuart?
Well, enemy to the right and to the left, to the rear and to the front. Yes, sir, it's enemy territory. The piles of an old bridge, blackened and burned, stood at Providence Forge. Kind name, Providence. An empty warehouse nearby. Providential. Its planks aren't meant for a peaceful life, men. We'll impress them into the Confederacy. At the double, now. Change that warehouse to a bridge.
Aye, sir.
Yes, General Stuart, sir.
Music, Sweeney. Give us a fast time. Rode around McClellan again up in Maryland. Gave Abe Lincoln here a chance to make a joke. Remember, Mr. Lincoln?
I remember, Stuart. I told my cabinet, when I was a boy, we had a game three times around and out. Stuart's been around McClellan twice. One more time, gentlemen. And McClellan's out.
Well, brought 1,200 captured mules and horses home that time. They made me trouble, those northern sympathizing mules. I had to report them.
Report them?
Mm-hmm. I sent a message to the enemy, too, like you, Captain Boyle.
Tell us, Stuart.
Come on, that's it.
Well, it was a dark night and blowing. We got right on top of that Yankee telegraph station, all unbeknownst to those within. We crept up silently, pushed open the station door. Who's that?
Johnny Reb.
Oh, no, my friend. You're not to sound an alarm. Gag him gently, boys. Sweeney, take over the key. It's nervous.
What's Yankee headquarters calling, sir? Reporting where we are.
Oh?
Which we aren't. General, they sure got us located all wrong.
Good.
But now they're giving their position, sir. Reporting where their units are to go to intercept us.
Well, let's listen all the way through, Sweeney. Let them talk all they want. It's their wire and their positions. Don't grudge them a minute.
No, sir, I won't, General. Well, seems like they're through, General Stuart.
Then thank them, Sweeney, and send my message.
Your message, sir?
To Quartermaster General Meigs, U.S. Army Yankee Blues, dear General, I wish to complain of the bad quality of the mules lately furnished your army. They are so poorly when we take them over, they embarrass us seriously in moving captured wagons. Signed, Jeb Stuart, Army of the Confederacy. Sweeney sent it with dispatch, and we rode home again.
Stuart, you're wonderful.
Beauty Stuart is right.
But more than laughter and dash and effrontery was Jeb Stuart to his cause. His ride around McClellan shook the confidence of the North, and in the South had an effect best called electric. Yes, Stuart was a stimulant, a spirit raiser, a high heart, and he knew he needed to be so. Well, listeners, friends, I hope we haven't overtired you. There are so many others you should meet. Why, right across the table here, dressed out in Yankee blue. Oh, but Chairman Franklin's rapping for order now.
Gentlemen, please, new business now. The taking in of new recruits.
Yes, new recruits. You didn't think adventure had died with the past or laughter was old, did you? Not in America.
No, among those suggested gentlemen with high qualifications, there is a certain seaman who told his story much more briefly than you, Smith, or you, Boyle, or Jeb. His report. Sighted sub. Sank same.
I like that.
And there is a general who, greatly outnumbered near Bastogne in Belgium, had his surrender demanded. He made quick reply to such arrogant nonsense. Nuts was all he said.
Yes, McAuliffe, Debong.
Then there are the young Marines who faced a bloody hill in Korea's desolation and called it Pork Chop Ridge because they wanted it so badly. Then there was a little Puerto Rican delegate at a great convention who stood up and cast his half vote against all odds. Then there was...
So many.
Joshua
what
Martin,
a company they'll join, these
Stephen
new
Decatur,
recruits.
Jennifer,
they're the men of laughter. These are swashbucklers who never heard of odds. These are the Americans who set out gaily to do the jobs that needed to be done and did them in a manner never to be forgotten. They have their monuments deep founded. Jamestown, saved many times by John Smith, is a park for the nation, saved forever. The prison where Thomas Hayward sang his song. The little Fort McHenry that guarded Boyle's home port, Manassas, Richmond, Fredericksburg, Jeb Stuart's fields are shrines and honored battlegrounds today. All set aside so that these men we have here met will be living history always, never smudged and faded, their lesson lost. That lesson? Laughter is a friend. Laughter is an ally. Laughter is a weapon to use on bullies. Laughter and adventure are Americans' inheritance.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from Mr. S. Perry Brown, past National Commander of the Legion. Mr. Brown.
The character of the American people is, and always has been, opposed to any form of dictatorship. So sincere was the desire of our founding fathers for a government of the people that in framing the Constitution of the United States, they provided a system of checks and balances to ensure for future generations of Americans a government of we the people. Having had since 1787 legislative, executive, and judicial branches of self-government, the American people were shocked in this century at the rise in the world of such modern-day despots as Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini, and find the autocracy of present-day communism a thing difficult to comprehend. In this present decade, the American aversion to entrenched leadership was witnessed when the 80th Congress proposed a resolution which, in 1951, became the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution, limiting the presidential term of office to one re-election or a period of 8 years. Americans have been brought up on the fresh air of freedom, and the responsibility of self-government is one they accept soberly. A government deriving its just powers from the consent of the governed is a reality in these United States, which is guarded jealously. The American Legion, dedicated for God and country, is pledged to combat subversive influences which would threaten this precious inheritance, and in all ways strives to encourage and nurture a vital and healthy Americanism.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Dorothea J. Lewis. Included in the cast were Paul Maron, Gil Mack, Richard Newton, John Larkin, John McGovern, Tom Charlesworth, Dick Hamilton, Jim Bowles, Bob Haig, Dan Ocko, and your narrator was Norman Rose. The music was composed and conducted by Roy Shields. This is Roger Bowman speaking. Inheritance was produced by William Welch and directed by Daniel Sutter. This has been an NBC Radio Network production.
Enjoy variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show, today over most NBC radio stations.